Hey everyone, this podcast is part of Story Mode, the podcast network of Gamefully Unemployed. You can support us and gain access to other great exclusive podcasts at patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed. That's patreon.com/GAMEFULLY unemployed, which is spelled like it sounds.
Hello everybody.
Hi everyone.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, my name is David Bell.
I'm Tom Ryman.
And we just watched The Man from UNCLE,
The Man's My Uncle.
Are they still following us?
Yes.
Is there one of them?
Hmm?
Is he looking at us?
Hmm?
Does he have just one hand on the steering wheel?
Mm-hmm.
When you hear something that sounds like a gunshot, drive.
Yeah, this is, oh man, this is a Patreon day, right?
It is, yes. This is We Just Watch Classic.
Yeah. This was given to us by Joshua Graves, who wanted us to watch the Guy Ritchie film, Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Mm-hmm. 2016? 2015. Okay.
Yep. It was a good choice. Tom, I guess starting out, how do you like this film?
I really like this movie. I already owned the Blu-ray, so it was like, when you told me we had to watch this movie, I was like, done and done.
Yeah, I went to rent it and realized I already owned it.
Mm-hmm. It's a good movie.
Yeah, I guess, all right, so this is, I think, the second Guy Ritchie film we've done. That's the thing. I sort of consider it the first Guy Ritchie film we've ever done, because can you remember what the second one is? Yeah, think hard.
Hold on.
Think real hard.
Hold on.
You want me to say it?
Hold on.
It's just dead air, man.
We've done a podcast about it?
Yeah, are you looking it up? Are you cheating?
No. All right. Oh, Aladdin.
Yes, it was Aladdin. And that's why it's like, this is sort of the first Guy Ritchie film. Aladdin was fine. It's just...
I liked Aladdin, actually.
Yeah, it's not really Guy Ritchie in the sense of him as a director, his brand.
Yeah. If you were to tell somebody, if they were like, what should I look to get a taste of the artistry of Guy Ritchie, Aladdin would not be where I would send them. Definitely not at first.
Not at first. I want to say he's kind of divisive as a director, at least from people I've talked to. I mean, I really like his films.
Mm-hmm. Most part, yeah. There's very few Guy Ritchie films that I don't like.
Yeah, he has... I say that, but I often criticize Tarantino for the same reason. He's a lot of style over substance.
Oh, yeah, no, his films don't mean anything.
Yes. I get more annoyed by Tarantino because he borrows from so many other things.
Mm-hmm.
So the style doesn't feel as earned... Guy Ritchie films are best done as sort of heisty Ocean's 11 crime movies where you're trying to guess what's going on,
mm-hmm.
or everything's going wrong. And I think that's why his movies, when they translated to bigger budget films, he sort of lost people a little bit. The King Arthur. I mean, I think people do like the Sherlock Holmes movies.
Yeah, I was going to say he's hit more than he's missed with the big budgets.
Yeah, that's true. I guess in a way it does transfer over pretty well.
Yeah,
I guess it's more like with me, because I think his style is better in post as like editing tricks as opposed to the moment you give him CGI, it gets a little tricky.
I don't know. I really like the look of this film. I think Guy Ritchie should direct more period crime films.
Yeah. Well, the reason I bring this up is because this film is, I think, for a lot of people, considered to be right on the line between Guy Ritchie, the indie like mob crime director, mm-hmm. and Guy Ritchie, the big budget Aladdin director.
Right.
This seems to have a budget behind it and a lot
of... Oh, it does.
Yeah, and a lot of effect shots. And I would say some of them don't work in terms of just like the truck when it lands on the boat.
That's probably the worst one. Is that it looks fake when it lands on the boat. It doesn't have real weight to it.
Yeah, and when they're at the Berlin Wall, like some of the just the scenery, the shots of the area looked a little cartoony.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, he has a lot of when they're doing the dune buggy chase at the end, and it's doing that like zoomed out shot of the land, and they keep zooming in on where they are. Mm-hmm. That's a very big effect shot, but I thought it was really effective in kind of just telling me what's going on visually.
Right. It was good at keeping the geography. Like, you're like, okay, Solo is here, and Ilya's over here, and the bad guy is here.
Yeah, yeah. And, overall, I think it works out, and I'm kind of bummed.
Yeah.
We're probably not going to see another one of these.
Yeah, it didn't do well. It had a budget of between 75 and 84 million, and it only made 107.
Yes. And the reason I guess it bums me out is because it's like there's plenty of room for this when we have those fucking Kingsman films, which are directed by Matthew Vaughn, who's a producer of Snatch.
Right, he's a Guy Ritchie protege, you'd say.
Yeah.
Or at least like a contemporary.
Yeah, they worked very closely, and of course he did Layer Cake, and then he went on to do the X-Men, and he's sort of had the same trajectory as Guy Ritchie, where it's like... He just like kind of sped up his career more.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, yeah, if there's three Kingsmans at this point, it's like, why not The Man from U.N.C.L.E.? This had a great dynamic between the characters.
Yeah, I really like it. This is a very fun movie.
Yeah. It really is. It's a fun, silly spy comedy.
Mm-hmm.
For people who haven't seen it, I guess... the plot is we start on Superman.
Mm-hmm.
I forget his actual name.
Napoleon Solo.
And he is a smooth-talking American spy. He's the cowboy James Bond.
Mm-hmm.
And he's on a mission at the Berlin Wall to retrieve this lady, this mechanic, mm-hmm. whose father is making a nuclear bomb for the Germans.
Yes. And this is in the 60s. This is in 1963.
For the Nazis.
Right. It's for guys
not,
who were Nazis like 15 years ago. Like for real Nazis.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Legit Nazis.
Yeah.
And he gets followed by what appears to be the bad guy. And they go on a delightful chase.
Mm-hmm.
And he makes it over the Berlin Wall. And he is moved on to his next assignment with this woman, and he's partnered with the same guy. He is a KGB agent. I forget his name.
Ilya. Mm-hmm.
And so we have a great dynamic where it's the two of them, like, they literally just fight the first time they see each other.
Yeah.
And then all their higher-ups just forcing them to work together. Hugh Grant being real Hugh Granty about it.
Yeah, he plays their M, like the commander.
Yeah.
Of the coalition, which is called, which is Uncle,
which they name it at the end.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. This kind of sets it up, and then it's based on it's based on a TV show from the 60s.
I never saw it. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't. I've was aware of it, but I've never.
Yeah,
actually
I think my
seen
parents
it.
Liked it. It sounded like it was good. I mean, it's as good as any like property to. Build this off of, because it's just like, yeah, I get it, you don't need to see the show.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just constantly competing with each other and kind of undermining each other while going on this mission.
There's some fun bits with Henry Cavill, who plays Solo, is like we said, he's kind of like cowboy James Bond. He's like very smooth operator, he's very suave, and then Ilya is just like angry all the time.
Yes.
He's just like an angry Hulk.
Yeah, he's just like, he's like a murderer. He's like, he's like an assassin.
Yeah.
He is the villain of a Jack Ryan film. Like,
yes.
He's terrifying, and his hands are shaky, and he takes everything personal.
Mm-hmm.
Where Henry Cavill is real smooth and fucks all the ladies.
He sure does.
Yep.
Just
and they
about.
Do. They, I was happy they don't really, they don't at all do a love triangle, because they could have easily done that.
No, yeah, it's there. They play up that, like, there's some romantic tension between Alicia Vikander and Armie Hammer, who plays Ilya, but, like, Solo is just, you know, he's not interested in her at all in that
way. No, he's just fucking all the ladies, he's having a great time.
Fucking all the other ladies, yeah, having a grand old time.
Yeah. Even the romantic tension doesn't really go anywhere.
Not really.
Because they knew. They wanted to make more of these, so they're like, let's keep that.
They clearly set up more films, and we're probably never going to see them, which is a real shame, because I'd like to see 5 of these.
Yeah, me too. I want to see more of this. And what's her name, the actress?
Alicia Vikander.
She was Ex Machina? Was she Ex Machina?
Yes, and okay. Tomb Raider.
And Tomb Raider. Yeah, she has a great moment where she is apparently a real lightweight. She drinks 2 small drinks and gets drunk enough to tackle Armie Hammer.
Oh, yeah, the whole dance and then wrestling scene is very funny.
It's delightful. And then she passes right out.
Yep.
Yeah. I think they kind of screwed her character over a little in this, because the reveal that we get is they're, okay, so they're working, her uncle is working with the Nazis to make this bomb. So they use her to get, they go undercover to get in contact with her uncle, and one of them pretends to be her fiance, and the other is just unrelated thief, suave thief, Henry Cavill.
Yeah, he's working another angle where this creepy lady is involved with the organization somehow, and he's working that angle while they're working the uncle
angle. Yeah, she's married to the Nazi, yeah. And she's sort of running the show too. She was a good villain.
Yeah.
I like how she's sort of swooning for Henry Cavill while also, like, you know, knowing that she's going to torture him to death.
Right. Like, knowing that that's the table.
Yeah. She finds him delightful.
Yes.
Like, she does, like, a literal swoon almost when she drugs him.
Yeah.
And he's like, my mom called me Napoleon and passes out.
That's a fun scene where he's getting drugged. Like, he knows he's been drugged, so he starts setting up pillows on the couch to lay down. She's like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, this has happened to me before, and I fell and smashed my head pretty hard, so I'm just going to lay down.
Yeah, it's great. He's that kind of, he's cartoonishly suave James Bond. Like, I could see these two being in, like, something created by the makers of Archer. Like, they have that almost, I'm self-aware of what a spy I am attitude.
Yeah, almost.
Yeah.
They never wink at the camera or anything.
No, not at all. It's not, but they have the right, like, dynamic for that. Mm-hmm. They have a really good dry deliveries of stuff. What happens is basically the lady they're working with double crosses them, reveals them both to be spies. Henry Cavill gets captured and tortured. And the scene I'm thinking of is when the torturer, they get the upper hand, strap him to the chair, and they accidentally electrocute him to death while they're not paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the great moment where they both look over and see him dead on fire, and one of them goes like, And the other one goes, and the other one's just like, damn, my jacket was in there.
Yep. Yeah, that's Henry Cavill says that one.
Yeah.
They're debating what to do with him. It's like, it was the Alicia Vikander, whose character's name is Gabby, it was her uncle who was a straight-up Nazi torture doctor in concentration camps. And basically, they're trying to work the angle to use her uncle to get her in contact with her dad, who is the one that's building the bomb for the bad guys. And
isn't hard to follow. It just doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't really matter. Yeah, it's pretty much like, okay, we know who the bad guys are right away. It's just a matter of how do we get to the secret place where they're keeping her dad. But they leave the Nazi doctor in there, Gabby's uncle, and they're like, they're debating what to do with him. Like, it's like, ah, on the one hand, he's a font of information. On the other hand, he's a horrible torturer with a history of crimes against humanity. And if we,
right, they're talking about how if he goes to America, they're just going to recruit him. Like, yeah, they're just going to cut him a job.
Yeah, they're going to cut him a deal and give him a job. And as they're debating what to do with him, we see him catch fire in the background because he's being electrocuted and they don't realize it.
it's delightful. It made me realize that Henry Cavill should do more comedies, but also more Guy Ritchie comedies.
Mm-hmm. No, Henry Cavill, I think, is very good. He's underutilized in a lot of things, primarily
he
as
really
Superman.
Is.
Like, he doesn't get to do much as Superman.
Yeah, Superman is the most boring character ever.
Yeah.
And that's sort of the big problem with Superman, I think. But that's another conversation.
Another podcast, yeah.
Circling back to why I think, what's her name, Gabby, why mm-hmm. she gets sort of a, I don't know. The reveal is that then after she double crosses him, the reveal is she's actually a spy working for Hugh Grant.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't, she doesn't have the ability to fight, which kind of bothered me.
She didn't start as a spy. Hugh Grant got to her first. So
right,
she was recruited
as a spy.
Correct. She was working with British intelligence, and they just left her there to see if her father would try to contact her, and instead these two clowns came first. So they were like,
Yeah. They introduce her as a mechanic who's really into cars mm-hmm. and can handle herself, and at the end they just sort of recruit her.
Yeah.
So somewhere in the middle, I wish she could fight, because otherwise there's no reason to recruit her. They're like, you got another mission at the end. And if I were her, I'd be like, no, I'm getting the fuck out of here.
There's not really, in fairness, there's not really ever a moment where she's called on to fight.
The one part I was thinking of is at the end, they crash the buggies.
Yes.
And they're all down and she's the only one. And she jumps on his back and she's like, she's a real wuss about it. And
he just kind of flips her off.
Yeah. And it's like, movie, you come this far. You might as well have her fight as well. Whatever. That was probably something in the sequels. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to pinpoint why this movie didn't work.
I don't think it did. I think it works.
Yes.
I think the problem is I think nobody went to see it.
Yeah, that is probably what I was leaning towards, because
mm-hmm.
I don't look at this film and think this didn't work mm-hmm. because I enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering if they needed to lean more on comedy.
I don't know. It got mostly overwhelmingly positive reviews, I think, the majority.
Yeah, it's also quite funny. I wonder if it's more that people didn't expect it to be as funny.
I suspect it has a lot to do with being a property that's not familiar to people. It's not a famous property. The title is very unusual and does not tell you what it is.
Right.
And if you look at the marketing, like, I remember there was a big billboard I would pass every day on the way to the office in Santa Monica. It's not immediately clear what kind of movie this is.
Yeah, that is all. Those are all good points.
And they kind of bury Guy Ritchie's involvement.
I'm wondering now, thinking about the trailers, I wonder if they actually downplayed the comedy or like misrepresented it. Because it's, again, it doesn't wink, but it's very silly.
Yeah, there's some very funny moments. Yeah.
Yeah, it's sillier. I would say the characters, and this is a weird thing to say, are more cartoonish than other Guy Ritchie films. They're sillier. And what I'm thinking of specifically is the boat chase scene.
Yes, the boat chase is very funny.
Yeah, it's delightful. It's also ridiculous. It's Henry, they break into a facility, they crack a safe, they do all this spy shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have to escape, and they get on a boat, and it becomes this elaborate boat chase in this like closed off area that they can't get out of. So Henry Cavill just decides, like, yeah, this isn't working.
Well, he falls off the boat.
Does he fall? I thought he jumped off.
No, it's one of the turns that Armie Hammer takes is too sharp, and he falls off the back of the boat.
All right. So he swims to the shore, gets in a truck, starts the truck, finds the right song on the radio he wants to listen to, finds one of them real European picnic baskets full of wine and cheese, and he
like a,
helps
like a, just a glorious looking sandwich.
Yes, that scene made
fresh,
me hungry.
Fresh tomatoes. Yeah, like there's fresh tomatoes on the sandwich, and there's like whole tomatoes in the basket.
Yeah.
And it's like on this awesome looking sourdough loaf. Like he just sits there and tucks a napkin into his collar and starts eating this sandwich. While in the background, we can see that Armie Hammer is still leading these boats on a chase in this little harbor.
Yeah, and he's just sort of watching it, enjoying mm-hmm. it. And then he just sort of like he's like considering leaving him. I kind of sense the point of it. Because Armie Hammer then gets his boat blows up and he's mm-hmm. drowning, and that's when he's just like, okay. And like he starts to drive away, I think, or he starts.
No, he drives straight forward.
Okay, and then mm-hmm. he lands on the boat, and then mm-hmm. he like takes his time in the car. They yeah. really stretch it out, which I like, and they make yeah. it all seem like the idea again. It's a very Archer moment where it's yeah. just like, yeah, just doing spy stuff. He's not at all excited about the situation. He's just sort of. You know, taking a quick breather
yeah,
for
he's
lunch.
Yeah, he's just kind of at work right now.
Yeah.
It's very funny.
It is. And that is, that plays into one of the biggest, I think, details of this film, which the film doesn't call attention to all the time. They're terrible spies. They talk about how they're spies all the time. In crowded areas, loudly.
That's true.
They're immediately found out. They suspect them immediately. Like, before they even learn. Like, he beats those people up in the bathroom. The part where they do the mugging test, where the idea is Armie Hammer has to pretend to be a weakling and get mugged because they know that they're being followed mm-hmm. and they want to make sure he's actually his cover. And then he still can't do it. He punches the guy. They walk away and not... Like, a second later, Henry Cavill comes walking up like, well, well, well. And then they just talk about spy shit. And it was like, those guys are within earshot.
Yeah, you didn't punch them deaf.
Yeah. They're very cavalier about talking about their spy stuff in public. Mm-hmm. They'll be walking out to the car like, so you're supposed to be my fiancé even though we're spies. And it's like, guys, shh.
Isn't it weird we're spies here in Rome?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a hyper reality. It's
yeah.
It's, again,
oh yeah.
It's,
no, this does not take place on planet Earth. This is
yeah. It's different than other Guy Ritchie films, which are also hyper realities, but in the sense that it's just a little more cartoonish in the comedy, in the way they talk, in like everything that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
It's all more outlandish, which isn't bad.
No, I believe some of the people's favorite qualities about Guy Ritchie's movies.
Yeah. I think because again, I've never heard like even Guy Ritchie fans bring this movie up. And so I was just thinking about like, what is it about this movie that kind of stands out from the rest that people don't talk about?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's just tonally a little different. Although I should say Revolver is another one people don't talk about. And I really like Revolver.
Yeah, I think this is just one that it suffered from being a property that nobody really knew. Yeah. It didn't do well. It kind of came and went. And yeah, I think it for those reasons, it doesn't get brought up a lot. Like Rock and Roller doesn't get brought up a lot too.
Yeah, and that's a terrific movie. I want to watch that right now. Now
mm-hmm.
they were going to make a second one of those, and they haven't.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? All right, I'm excited for The Gentlemen.
Oh, of course.
But the marketing, I get a feeling that it's going to bomb because they're trying to make it look like The Kingsman. Like the marketing, like I think this might be a problem with Guy Ritchie is that they don't know how to sell him.
Right, because he's not...
He's
not
a fan of him.
Right, he's not Matthew Vaughn.
Yeah.
Like his movies aren't going to look like The Kingsman because that's not what he does.
Yeah, I would argue that The Kingsman was a lucky... break too, because again the king this if you like Kingsman you're gonna like Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And I think Kingsman got better marketing or something. People glommed onto it, because when you look at like the cast of the Kingsman, like action hero Colin Firth leading the charge, and it's just like, This could have flopped real
bad. This could have gone real wrong.
But it didn't.
Mm-mm.
For one reason or another.
Well, I think he had already done First Class at that point, right?
Yeah.
So I think it had the benefit of being like from the director of First Class and Kick-Ass, which was also
in Oh, it. You know what? Kick-Ass is what did it, I bet. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's very similar to Kick-Ass.
Yeah, for sure. I forgot about
Kingsman
Kick-Ass.
Is rather not this movie. This movie is not at all like Kick-Ass.
No, it is not. I feel like it's a weird twilight between the two, because this has also felt like a PG-13, right?
It is, yeah.
Yeah. So this is Guy Ritchie doing like sort of his crime style and sort of his commercial Hollywood style, like trying to find something in between. It's really just talking about the fact that Guy Ritchie has range in his tone.
Mm-hmm.
But I think people don't realize that, because I think Guy Ritchie's films, I mean, I think to most people they all kind of look the same and feel the same, but I would say the characters in this are very different than other Guy Ritchie films.
Yeah, and it's not terribly similar to like Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah. It does have some, like, it has some Pan flute in the soundtrack.
Oh, yeah, the soundtrack is very like Snatch.
Yeah. And it does have some genuine Guy Ritchie moments when he's getting tortured, and before the torturing, the guy takes out his little fucking photo album,
mm-hmm.
and explains who he is.
With the spinning light bulb, that's a good sequence.
Yeah, they make him genuinely menacing before making him immediately a coward.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. As soon as the tables are turned, yeah, he's a coward.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like, I mean, that makes sense. He's an expert. He's basically just does a quick biography on himself, very self-aware of like, yeah, when I was young, I was a bullied young kid, and then I got beat up a lot, and I decided to inflict pain on others, and, you know, an opportunity came in the Nazis, so I became a Nazi because I wanted to torture people, and check out my photos of all the people I've tortured, and this space is for you. And then the moment he's caught, he's like, yeah, as a torturer, I know how awful this is, so I'm a coward, and I'm going to tell you everything.
Yeah. He's like, I'll tell you anything. You don't even need to torture me. I'll tell you anything you want immediately.
He keeps saying, I'll testify, which I right, like. Yeah. Like, he's bringing it all the way to court.
Yeah, he's like, I'll testify against anyone you want. I don't even have to know them. Like, he's like offering to invent testimony.
Yeah. Like, it's just a real fun coward.
Oh, yeah.
They did good with that character, because, I mean, it's that thing of there's two types that in movies you can do whatever you want to, and that's zombies and Nazis.
Yeah.
And he's a real Nazi, this guy.
Oh, and they took the time with that photo album scene to firmly establish, like, not only is he a Nazi, he's like a Nazi torture doctor.
Yeah. Yeah, he's the least sympathetic character.
Right, conceivable. Like, the least sympathetic character you could imagine.
Yeah, and they had fun with that.
Yeah.
They're like, let's light him on fire after electrocuting him. Yeah. And the whole bit where the thing isn't working, mm-hmm. like, they're able to not make our... I mean, it's the right combination for, like, a more middle-of-the-road Guy Ritchie situation where it's we want to make... We don't want to make these two just murderers,
mm-hmm.
But we want to murder this guy. So let's have the chair malfunction, and then we can still add the fact that they feel absolutely nothing for him after when they discover what happened.
No, I would. I'm like, well, I guess that solves that problem.
Yeah,
took the decision out of our hands.
It works really well.
Yeah, it's a very funny sequence.
I liked that. I like the boat sequence at the end.
Yeah.
Which I totally forgot happened.
Yeah. It's where it's Solo talking to the evil lady on the radio.
Yeah, she's Paris Hilton. It's Paris Hilton.
Kinda,
not really, but
not really.
She just reminded me of.
Yeah, no, that's a really good sequence.
Yeah, well, I liked it because they end with a big action sequence, and you kind of think that's it, and then you realize, oh, there's more villains, and that sequence is just all dialogue and strategy.
Well,
and it's not not particularly smart. They do that thing. Guy Ritchie keeps doing it where he, and it's such a, he loves this shit, where he like shows a scene and then goes back and is like, but you missed this and this and this. That scene, I didn't really miss anything. Like, you could tell what they were doing.
Right, you knew what they were doing. They established it. But it's just like, I think it worked.
Yeah, no, I think it worked. I think it doesn't work as well as some of the others. He loves those sort of montage sequences, I think of in, like, the ones where something, a crucial event is happening, and you're seeing kind of it over music, and you're not quite sure what's happening.
Yeah.
I think of the rabbit scene in Snatch.
Yes, yeah.
And they do, I think they did a better job when she's flipping on them and telling them that they're KGB and
right,
CIA.
And we're not hearing what she's saying at first.
Yeah. That was fun.
Yeah.
He did some good sound stuff. When she's talking to her uncle in the car, and we're outside of the car, so we just can't hear what they're saying.
But we are.
I thought there was something wrong with my sound at first.
We're getting the subtitles because Ilya is listening.
Right.
And that's sort of, yeah, and it's, yeah, that's letting us know that he's bugged her and is listening.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of fun.
Yeah, the last thing I was going to say about last thing with the sequence, the boat sequence where it's Solo talking to the bad lady on the radio. I like that because it sort of, they, like, Ilya and Solo sort of each got their villain, like, and they beat them in their way. Like, Ilya beats his guy by throwing a motorcycle at him and then stabbing him to death because he's a Hulk. Solo just talks to this lady and destroys her by talking to her.
Yeah, there's definitely, it's that battle between these two styles of being a spy.
Exactly.
Both of which, I would argue, aren't very good because they're not good spies. They're terrible spies. In the world, they're fine. They're great spies in the world. They tell us. They're like, they're the top spies. But in like the reality and just watching them, I kept being like, you fucking guys are going to get caught.
Yeah, I did. I super enjoyed the scene where Henry Cavill is catfishing her, where he tricks his way into the race and is like, you know, lifting people's jewelry and stuff, and he's just being this real charming thief. Like, I thought, like, I really enjoyed that. I was like, I thought he was good at being a spy. It's just that you're also correct that they do talk about spy shit in public within earshot of other people.
And again, I think the bad guys meet them both and are like, these guys are spies. Like,
well, they're suspicious because they're
immediately suspicious.
Well, they're both indirectly asking to be connected into their organization. So it's like anyone who comes sniffing around and looks like those two dudes, like, oh, you guys
are. That's the other part. Yeah. They stick out like sore thumbs.
Yeah, they're both giant. So it's you guys kind of look like spies.
Yeah. You guys fucking spies?
Yeah. Are you guys in the Avengers?
Like, they're really, I would not send them on this mission, is my point.
No, you'd send like a little geeky looking guy who doesn't look like a superhero.
Yeah. That will beat people up in a bathroom when he's upset.
Yeah.
And blow his cover.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun.
Yeah.
Henry Cavill does a tablecloth trick for some reason.
Yeah, just, you know, because.
Again, Hugh Grant's there. Who's the, oh, fuck. I'm forgetting everybody's name today. The Henry Cavill's handler.
It's Jared Harris.
Jared Harris, thank you. They got a Jared Harris in there.
They got, man, solid Jared Harris.
How many Guy Ritchie things have Jared Harris been in? Because he seems built for Guy Ritchie.
Just the two. He was Moriarty in the second Sherlock Holmes, and then this
right.
one.
Right. When was this made in relation? Is it between the Sherlock Holmes?
No, it's after them.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah, Game of Shadows, I want to say, was like 2011 or 2013 maybe, around there.
Okay, so this was like his Sherlock Holmes. He was coming off of Sherlock Holmes.
Yes.
And he was like, yeah, I want to break out. I want to expand. Let me do this spy thing. And then it didn't work out. And then someone's like, well, we got King Arthur. And he's like, yeah, give me King Arthur. Fine. Fine. You want me to do an Aladdin too? You want to throw in an Aladdin? Fine.
See, the only one of those films I think is actually bad is King Arthur.
King Arthur, I think his worst films are King Arthur, and I haven't seen it, but I'm just going to assume Swept Away is terrible.
That's what everybody says, but
yeah,
I don't know.
It's his Madonna movie. It was...
Right. I don't know how much of that is people just wanting to hate it because it's his Madonna movie.
Well, because it's nothing like he's ever done.
Right.
Which is why I want to see it. The Gentleman thing is a big test for me. Because, yeah, I've liked a lot of Guy Ritchie, but, like, the second Sherlock Holmes...
The second Sherlock Holmes is kind of stinky, yeah.
Yeah, and this was, like, kind of sandwiched in it. So I think that might be part of it, because going back and watching this, the first time I watched this, I was like, yeah, that was okay. And I didn't really think about it, because it was like, Guy Ritchie's already, like, kind of gone in this direction that I'm not sure about.
Mm-hmm.
And CGI action kind of turns me off a lot. Going back to it this time, I was like, oh, this is really fun.
Yeah, this is really funny. This is a super fun movie, yeah.
Yeah, having some distance from it helped.
Mm-hmm. I don't think there's anything wrong with the film itself. I think it kind of was a victim of marketing and, you know, not being a familiar brand, and then whatever that intangible thing is that just sometimes people just don't buy tickets to see the movie.
I think he's I think for a while, like, I remember whenever it was like a Guy Ritchie film's coming out, and I'd be like, I don't need to know what it's about. I'm going to go see a Guy Ritchie film. And there were fans specifically of Guy Ritchie.
Mm-hmm.
He had, again, that Tarantino feel. And then he sort of started doing movies that didn't feel like they belonged to him. The Sherlock Holmes was exciting because that was like Guy Ritchie doing Sherlock Holmes. And I think this is a problem that happened to a lot of indie directors, is then the properties started enveloping them. So then when it was like, this isn't Guy Ritchie's King Arthur, this is Guy Ritchie was told to do a King Arthur, did the best he can, probably had a nightmare production, and, you know, this farted out.
Yeah, that is that is a bizarre film.
Yeah, it really is.
That film is going to confound future generations.
Yeah. So I think this was a point where people weren't just like, oh, Guy Ritchie film, I'm in. You know, it didn't have that.
I think as I mentioned, I think they even undersold his involvement in this movie.
Probably, yeah. They probably didn't think that he was
a draw,
a big selling
point. Yeah.
And that's the thing. He is, as long as he's making a you know, moderately budgeted film.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I'm thinking again about The Gentleman, where it's like, okay, now he's made Aladdin.
Yeah.
And all this other shit. Like, is this going to be, you know, is this going to just, which direction is this going to go in? Is he trying to harness the Kingsman thing? Is that why they're marketing it that way?
No, I think it's going more in this direction.
Yeah, because I'm excited for The Gentleman. What I'm more excited for is the next one, the truck heist for Jason Statham. Cash Truck. Yeah, sequel to Cash Cab.
Got an amazing cast already. It's based on a French film that you can actually go... you can watch it now.
I refuse.
It's got Jean Desjardins in it.
Oh, okay. Maybe. I love him working with Statham. The last one was Revolver, I think. And Revolver is his most underrated film because it's very weird. It's like a Guy Ritchie, but not. It's like, without spoiling it, you think it's one type of movie and then it's not. And it's Guy Ritchie kind of taking advantage of the fact that he's Guy Ritchie and he's got Jason Statham, and you expect something of that. The execution isn't perfect, but I really appreciate that film. It's a lot of fun.
And well, he didn't even really, in his two, in Lock, Stock, and in Snatch, it's not like, the way Statham is used in those films is not really the way that most people would think of Jason Statham.
Yeah, he uses Jason Statham, I think, better than anybody, because to him, Jason Statham isn't action star Jason Statham. Like, he got to him before he was in The Transporter, you know?
Yeah, yep.
And then he was just kicking his way to stardom.
Yeah, just kicking
and
people.
And so, it's that thing where it's like, he's one of the people who can really write good, funny shit for Jason Statham.
Yes, yeah.
I would argue Hobbs and Shaw harnessed that side of Statham. Crank, of course, did. Like, not people do understand that Statham is game for some real weird shit.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like Guy Ritchie is the only one who can be like, Statham, I want you to crawl in this cabinet and shut it, and I'm going to film it, and I'll explain why later, and Statham will just do it.
Right, yeah. Because they're buddies.
Yeah. He can put Statham in that cabinet.
He can stick Statham in a box.
Yep.
Full of soup cans. Yep. And he will do it without questioning it.
Yeah, and just film a scene around it, never telling anybody that Jason Statham is right there the whole time. Just in that box. like a scared little Statham.
It comes through in the scene, though. You can tell. You can feel his energy.
Oh, you can feel how angry and surly that box is.
Yeah, you can feel it. It's radiating. Yeah. It's pulsating out from that cabinet.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I feel like we've got enough subject. This movie's a lot of fun.
Yes.
I'd say it also, the other thing it falls victim to is that we're in a time where you either have to go big or go home. The only action series that gets away with having what I would call like quaint action, maybe Kingsman, but even Kingsman is go big or go home. Like Hobbs and Shaw, they have to be superheroes in that. So
right, this is almost it has to be over the top in Hobbs and Shaw.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the maybe misconceptions about this movie. It's not really an action movie. It's more just spy comedy.
I didn't even think they use guns until the very end.
They use a gun when they break into the place, and he does that Russian slap that knocks a guy out while standing up.
Yeah, yeah. But then he only uses the gun to shoot the window out and dive out the window.
Yes. Yeah. Again, it's not particularly violent.
It's a spy movie. It's more of an action than an action movie.
The violence is more in, like, the torture scene. It's more implied violence and menacing shit. Like, it's...
Yeah.
It's a horrifying little thing they do with that torture guy. Which was, I don't know, pretty great.
Yeah, he's a little Nazi gremlin. He's effective.
Getting lit up. I think that's my favorite scene.
It's pretty good.
The truck scene too. The truck scene, I remembered the basic idea of the truck scene, but then the fact that this movie is not afraid of halting the action scene. And again, I wonder if this is why it pissed people off, or again, this is assuming it might have pissed people off. It's just such an irregular thing to do, is they're giving us an action boat chase, and then they're like, but let's hang out with Henry Cavill and listen to music. And it's such a good idea.
Yeah, and they never really show our heroes beating people up. Like, the scene where Ilya beats up the three guys in the bathroom is implied. We don't see it.
Yeah.
All we see is him shut the door and look over at them menacingly, and then we hear about it later.
Yeah.
So it's you're right. It does sort of undercut its own action scenes for the sake of
comedy.
Right, for the sake of doing something funny.
Yeah, it's more a comedy than it is anything else.
Mm-hmm.
It's more about these characters bickering with each other and kind of fucking up their own plans.
Yes.
Because of their emotions and ego and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's like, in a way, it's classic Guy Ritchie for that reason, which is that the heroes have elaborate plans and then the stupidest things go wrong. In this case, the things that go wrong are just their own stupidity. Like Henry Cavill cracking the safe, and they're like, what about the alarm? He's like, there's no alarm, and then the alarm goes off. It's like, these are bad. They're bad at their job.
There's no alarm on this model. Yeah, Cavill gets caught up by his ego, and then Ilya gets caught up by, he gets angry. It's like, it's literally emotion, and then emotion versus ego.
Yeah, and Guy Ritchie is really good at that aspect of taking caricatures that we see from other movies.
Mm-hmm.
And making them have very human flaws and making that fun. And I want to see him do more spy stuff playing with that idea.
Yes.
It doesn't have to be like a sequel to this would be great, but more like a Burn After Reading, where it's like spy stuff done in the Guy Ritchie style, where it's just like shit just doesn't go right. or weird coincidences happen, or everything, you know, just gets mashed with each other in some fun way. Like, that's what he's good at. So, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I recommend this movie.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. I don't even need to think about it. Watch this movie.
Yeah, it's super delightful. It's almost, it's like, yeah, it's another one that I would say it's an underrated Guy Ritchie film.
Very much so.
It's a little hidden. If you're not into Guy Ritchie, you won't like this.
No, probably not.
It's very Guy Ritchie.
It's not the most
Guy Ritchie.
No.
It's lightly Guy Ritchie.
It's not maximum Guy.
Yeah. What is the most Guy Ritchie film?
Snatch.
Yeah, probably.
Yep. It's got to be Snatch. Yeah.
It's got to be Snatch. It's very Guy Ritchie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a sode. I think we've talked enough about this movie.
Okay. Who did I say? Joshua Graves. Thanks for being a real cool cat.
Thanks
and making
for
us
being
watch
a
this
dude.
One.
Dude, thanks this for one was being a breeze. Cool guy on Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Yeah, happy Thanksgiving,
happy
everybody.
Thanksgiving, you guys.
I hope you're swallowing them turkeys. Just swallowing them whole.
Just letting it glide down your gullet in a boat full of gravy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Let's have a big old turkey tummy.
Mm-hmm.
If you guys are interested, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed, along with giving us our own episodes of We Just Watch. We have exclusive podcasts there, like Tom and Jeff Watch Batman.
True.
And Fox Mulder is a Maniac.
Also true.
We have movie nights where you can watch movies with us. I think, Tom, there's been one requested of us. I think it's called Strange Magic, the George Lucas movie.
The George Lucas movie. Okay,
Several of our pals, such as Cody Johnston and Abe Epperson, have requested we watch that. So we're going to have to do that. Yeah. Maybe tomorrow.
And they drop we'll in from see. Time to time. We'll see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Actually, Abe's usually there. So.
Oh, no. Cody said he'd make sure.
For Strange Magic? All right.
Yeah, no, that's a Cody guarantee. Strange Magic. Yeah, guys.
Strange Magic.
Check that. So we should do Strange Magic and Red Tails.
Yeah, I mean, obviously.
Yeah.
Or Howard the Duck.
We could do Howard the Duck. Guys, this
Willow,
is what you're missing
dude,
out on.
We could use
if you're
Willow.
Not a subscriber.
Willow. Hmm? We could do Willow.
Willow. God, guys.
There's
this
so
is
much
what,
fucking shit
don't
we
you
could
want
do.
It? Don't you want to watch Strange Magic and Willow with us?
Yeah. Isn't that a thing you want?
Yeah. Spend
speaking
4 hours.
Other
Sorry.
Things you want. We also have a store, tpublic.com/store/gamefullyunemployed, where you can get stickers and t-shirts, posters and stuff. We'd be so thankful on this Thanksgiving for you guys to check all of this stuff out.
Yeah. And we are thankful.
We are, truly, we are.
Yeah, and for Guy Ritchie, and for Henry Cavill.
Mm-hmm. And for Strange Magic.
Strange Magic. Everybody check it out.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks to our subscriber for giving us Strange Magic.
Strange Magic.
That's what this podcast is about now.